Hi, I'm Steele DeGuglielmo. Welcome to the So Much More podcast, where we talk with people in the custom window treatment and soft home furnishings industry. Today, we welcome Kim Chagnon. More than 21 years ago, Kim Chagnon wanted to try her hand at reupholstering a sofa. She waited 9 months for an opening in a local class. When a spot opened up, Kim jumped in. Once a week for 2 years, Kim traveled 40 miles round trip and learned to upholster that sofa and a few more pieces. Friends noticed Kim's work and began asking her to do it for them. Kim's upholstery was born out of the love and enjoyment of this class. Kim began sharing her knowledge on YouTube. Since then, she and her husband Bill have produced over 100 videos. Kim has an upholstery class website where you can subscribe for 24/7 access to our educational videos. Kim also has a Craftsy class with over 1,000 students signed up. Kim, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Seal. I'm happy to be here and glad you asked me to do this with you.
Oh, I'm happy to have the chance to talk with you. So the upholstery class was what started your interest in upholstery, but had you done any sewing or that type of creative thing before you took the upholstery class?
Yes, I basically came from a family of female seamstresses, you know, where the grandmother sewed, the aunt sewed, my mother sewed, my grandmother's mother sewed. So it was just kind of one of those things that I grew up around. And I think from the time I was 9 years old, I started sewing. It was when my grandmother decided that she needed an upgrade in her machine and was nice enough to give me a Brother sewing machine that she had. And it was one of those old metal blue, you know, sewing machines that you see out there from the past that was just like the dream come true, you know.
Right.
I now had my first sewing machine. And I started, you know, at that age, it was the Barbie dolls and the doll clothing stuff. And then the more, you know, the older I got, then I began making clothes for myself. And it just kind of snowballed into home decor, things for my kids. And then at one point in my life, I was making like the folk art dolls that my mother and I were selling at craft fairs, that kind of thing. So it just, you know, quilting, and it went through the whole gamut of anything you could possibly sew. I've sewed at one point or another, except for wedding gowns, which if my daughter ever gets married, I still don't think I'll do that.
And there are a lot of people who feel that way. I've made a couple. I'm not sure I'll ever make any more.
Yeah.
So, this question has come up with a couple of people that I've interviewed. Do you remember being taught to sew, or because you grew up in an environment where it was a constant, was it just part of what you saw on a regular basis?
My mother did teach me how to read a pattern when I showed some interest in it, and then my grandmother gave me her machine. My mother did teach me the, you know, the methods of reading a pattern and what the different things meant on a pattern. So yeah, there was a little bit of instruction.
But it was also something that was always a part of your life too.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what made you want to take this upholstery class? What was it about upholstery, or was it because you just wanted a newer couch?
Well, I've always been a DIYer. You know, I'll look at something that somebody has paid to have somebody do for them, and I'm like, I'm going to figure out how to do that. You know, and that's just been my nature. And in my first marriage, we had a sofa that needed to be reupholstered. So we did hire an upholsterer to do the body of the piece. And my mother said, I'll help you make the cushions. Let's save you some money. So we did that portion of that way back when. And then when Bill and I got together, he brought a sofa into the relationship that just did not fit my decor. And you know how we are that work with fabric. Things have to match. They have to look good together. So that was my, like, okay, I know I can do this. And so that's when I hunted for a class, was because of that aspect.
And 40 miles round trip to the class every week, that was dedication. So what motivated you when you first started? Was it the, I can do this, or I can do this for less, or I really want to learn how to do this, or all of the above?
All of the above, probably. It was like the, I can do this, and I want to figure it out. You know, I'm one of those people that don't make the mistake of telling me, Kim, you can't do that, because I will kill myself figuring out a way that I can do that. That's just my personality. And
okay.
It's just, you know, the DIY stuff just drives me.
Okay. So you reupholstered the sofa. You reupholstered some other pieces that during the class.
Mm-hmm.
And at what point were people starting to say, maybe Kim would do this for me? Was it during the class or when you completed it?
It was actually during the class. And I wasn't able to do the sofa as a class project. And now, teaching upholstery, I get that. I understand why my instructor put those limitations on us, per se. So I did the first chair for my mother-in-law. It was my first project. And it was basically because I didn't have a chair that I needed to do. And she said, well, I've got one here. Use this. So as soon as I finished hers, a girlfriend saw what I had done. And I was on the hunt for another project, hadn't quite found what I wanted. And she said, I've got a wingback chair. You want to do mine? So I said, sure. Okay, I'll do that. And then so I did her wingback chairs, the second project. And then the third project was one for myself. It was a channel back chair. And then I did a little chest because I wanted to learn tufting. Mm-hmm. And then people would come into my home and say, I love that chair. Where'd you get it? And I'd say, I reupholstered it myself. And then the snowball began. You know, it was like, oh, will you do mine? And then I have to say, probably within a year of doing that, after I finished the class, I was getting phone calls that said, I'm a friend of Chris's. I saw the chair you did for her that's in her living room. Will you do one for me? She said you might do that. And that just started happening more and more. So I'm having these strangers call my phone saying, I saw what you did for somebody else.
So that's not an uncommon thread in our industry. People got started with something that they were good at that we take for granted that everyone can do because we can do it. And that's not true. At what point did it become a business for you? And was it a planned business? Did you sit down and say, I'm going to turn this into a business? Or did you all of a sudden one day realize, oh, I'm making money at this. I need to put some effort into the planning stages of it. How did that evolve for you?
Probably more the, oh, I guess I've got this going and maybe it is a business after all. I mean, my background is I have a degree in computer programming and I have a degree in portrait photography. And I worked in the computer programming field for a while and said, you know what, I need to be with people. And then I became a mother and said, you know what, I want to stay home with my kids. Mm-hmm. My husband at the time and I had a printing business together and, you know, we had kids, decided to sell the printing business. And I got a job offer, you know, making good money right out of the box designing for another company, a graphics company. And I said, you know what, I want to stay home with my kids. So I opened a daycare so that I could be there with them and help other people who had kids that they needed, you know, to have somewhere during the day. So I did daycare for a while and started doing the upholstery while I was doing that. And it got to the point where I'm working 40 hours a week during the day with the kids. And then I'm working 20 to 30 hours a week, evenings and weekends, doing furniture for other people. And I'm like, this is a business. This is not a hobby anymore. Mm-hmm. It's not help a friend out and make a couple bucks. It's a full-blown business. And I can't continue the 70 hours a week.
Right.
So it was kind of at that point, you know, and in there somewhere, I said to Bill, you know you don't like your job and I've got these two going. Can you come help me? He's like, he looks at me like, I don't know. I hadn't thought of that. And so I said, look, you know, you can work out in the garage during the day when I'm with the kids and you can tear down the furniture and get it ready. And then when the kids are napping in the afternoon, you can come in and sit until you hear anybody and I can go out in the shop and work. And he's like, all right, let's give it a try. You know, what can hurt? Just give it a try, see where it goes. So we did that for, I don't even know how many years. It's been a long time, but several years. Mm-hmm. And finally, it was 80 hours a week we were working. And it was like, okay, when can you make that move and get rid of the other business and devote everything to this specific one? Because you're getting burnout mode at this point. And so we finally said, let's put a number in the telephone book and see what happens. We're committing to a year for whatever it was, $100 a month, and we'll see what happens. Well, the year we put it in the phone book was when 9/11 happened. We signed the phone book contract in August, September, you know, everything happened in New York. And we're like, there goes, you know, $1,200 this year because the business is going to go nowhere. Mm-hmm. And unbeknownst to us, people started staying home and traveling and our phone just went ballistic. When the phone book printings came out in October, the phone has never stopped ringing since.
Wow. That's incredible. And I know, that a lot of people experienced a lull around then, but a lot of people have also said exactly what you said. People were staying home and they were noticing what was around them and they needed that sense of beauty and security around themselves. And what better way to do that than to make their environment someplace that they wanted to be. So I don't think I ever really put those two things together, but it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And it really was astounding to us. You know, you put a phone number in the book and you expect, you know, to have a little bit of business coming in. But within a year's time, we completely gave up the daycare business altogether and we're just doing the upholstery. And it was making a living for two of us. You know, it was his income and mine.
Okay. And I have to say that running a daycare takes a very special kind of person because I worked in a daycare as a teenager, and I almost decided I wasn't going to have children after doing that. So bless you for that.
And, you know, it was always a good sense of birth control for my children, too. So, you know, they were entering their teen years going, I don't want to deal with that.
Right. So it had a dual purpose. That's
it
awesome.
Did.
So that really was a commitment without being overwhelming. Like you said, let's put a number in the paper and in the phone book and see what happens. So at that point, did you have a business plan, or did you just let's see what comes our way and let's go with it?
It was by the seat of our pants,
okay.
You know, and I often say, Bill and I often have this conversation with new entrepreneurs starting businesses. If we had read all the things that you must have in order before you start a business, we would have never gone in this direction. I mean, really, you look at that list of things that a business planner or somebody gives you and you're like, oh my God, you know, who can do all this?
Right.
And, you know, you read a book like The E-Myth and it's the same thing. You're like, I could never do this.
Right.
But it's one of those things, if you really want to do something, the only way you're going to find out if it's for you or if it's, you know, feasible is to try
it.
And the worst thing that can happen is you learn that it's not the right thing for you and you move on to something else.
Mm-hmm.
Or you learn how to improve it along the way.
Right. And get better at it.
Yeah.
I heard a quote today about a woman said that she thinks some of her best jobs started because she was woefully inadequate when she started them and studied and researched so that she could learn more about it as she went into the job. And those were the things that prepared her. But she said, I started many jobs without being ready. And I thought that really is good advice for an entrepreneur because same thing, if you start to read, you need this license and you need this and you need this, it can dissuade you from
mm-hmm.
ever getting started. So I think
yeah.
entrepreneurs are a special breed in that they either ignore things like that or they say, like you said, go ahead, tell me I can't do it. Just tell me I can't
right.
do it.
And, you know, if it's a business that you can do from a home base, you're not committing to a rent somewhere.
Right.
If you've got a business that you've got to really go out and physically move to a special location, then you need a lot more consideration.
Right.
But, I mean, I'm sure with most of the people in our industry, I started upholstering people's furniture in my living room.
Mm-hmm.
So I would shove all my furniture back to one side of the room so that I'd have room to put this piece in, and the kids had to play outside for the weekend.
Right.
You know, it was one of those things.
You may not come near this.
Right. Don't touch it. There's staples on the floor. Stay out.
So how many years were you doing the upholstery before you started to get into the education part of it?
Oh, let's see. 96. Probably about 10 years. Probably about 10 years into it. And we started producing the YouTube videos that we have out there specifically to educate the retail client and help them to see the value behind the product we were offering.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sure anybody that's dealt with the furniture industry knows there is so much on the market today that's disposable furniture that is at such a low price point that it's not worth it for people to reupholster these pieces, first of all. But, you know, they purchase these pieces and you're telling them it's costing them twice that to get a piece of furniture reupholstered.
Right.
And to make them understand the benefits to reupholstering something that they had as a solid wood frame. So our YouTube channel originally started to educate the retail client and not so much to educate the DIYer
okay.
or the person looking to add something to their income. It was strictly to educate our clientele.
Okay.
And within, I would say within months of that happening, the emails and the phone calls, because in there we say, contact us at Kim's Upholstery. Here's how to get a hold of us. And, you know, the phone started ringing, the emails started coming in, and people are like, okay, I want to know how to do that. Can you tell me what sewing machine you're using? What staple gun do you have? Where did you buy it? And, you know, it was just question upon question upon question. And we kind of looked at each other and said, there's something else here. You know, we never knew there was such a need for it because I found a class, so I just assumed anybody hunting
right.
could find a class. And that was the adult education that used to be around. It's not around as much anymore.
That's
through the
correct.
You know, technical schools and things.
Mm-hmm.
So
you were running the business. You saw this. You and Bill decided this is a way to educate our clients. And then you found another group of people who were hungry for knowledge.
Yeah.
You started with YouTube. Was that all free information that you put together? because it was to educate your retail client. At what point did you realize that that was something you had to offer that had value besides the value of the upholstery?
Well, I guess the first time I thought of it as a value offered option is when my local WCA group said, Kim, we want you to teach us how to do a tufted ottoman. And I went, you really want to have me teach a class? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm not a public speaker. I never was a public speaker. And you wouldn't know that to look at me today, probably.
No, that's very true.
But they said, you know, it's just us, you know, it'll be just a quaint little group. We'll do it in somebody's workroom. And I'm like, nervous as a wreck, but said, all right, I'll give it a try. So I did that for that group. And then it just kind of snowballed from there that I started getting more phone calls and said, all right, you know, let's figure out a way to make this part of our living. Mm-hmm. And then that's where our online classes were born. And, you know, in between there, I've done the conferences and things.
Right.
So it's just kind of snowballed.
And you also did the sewing and upholstery retreat in 2014.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about what that was like and the part where you are sharing your knowledge with people? Because I know for a lot of the teachers in this industry, that is such a, it has value in and of itself, that sharing, what you as teachers get out of it as much as we get out learning from you. So if you could share a little bit about that experience, I'd appreciate it.
Well, Bill and I had been throwing the idea around of doing something like that. And Susan Woodcock ended up being at a local event. And I said, you know, this is what I'm thinking of doing. And she's like, you know, I've been thinking about that too. Let's do it together. So we kind of collaborated and did it together. But the best part for me is when you get there, first of all, I had all these people coming up to me like we were long lost friends who I had never laid eyes on before. And it was like, wow, they know who I am, you know, which was kind of intimidating.
Yes.
You know, and then after the, you know, after the classes, people telling me how much they got out of it. And then the emails start coming with the shared projects. And that just, I mean, my eyes lit up. I love seeing the finished project that a student does. And when I do like the live workshops or the live hands-on training, I love watching the expression on their face when I teach them a specific cut or an aspect to upholstery. And all of a sudden you see that light bulb go off.
Right.
And it's like, oh my God, they got it, you know, and you can just see their expression. You can see the joy that they feel. And that for me is the huge benefit, is I love seeing that reaction from somebody when I'm teaching them something.
And you also were at the Custom Workroom Conference this past February. And
yeah.
So you also had that same experience there, I'm sure.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And again, it was people that came up to me and said, I watch your videos all the time. I'm a member of your site and I love it. And look at this is what I've done with my living room. And they'll show me stuff on their cell phone. And it's really neat to see that and to see the excitement that they feel from the satisfaction of what they completed.
So tell me about your upholstery classes. I know it's a subscription, and once people subscribe, they have 24/7 access to the classes. So explain a little bit to anyone who's listening about how that works.
Okay. So our website has a members-only portal. Within that members-only portal, there right now are, I think, 43 video titles, and we've got a couple more going up in the next few days. But so each video title is on something different. So there might be a title that is specifically on one style of a cushion. There's a video title that might be a certain style of a chair. So the projects that are like chairs per se are broken down into different parts. So you have one portion that's the deck and one portion that's the inside arms, inside back. So it's easy for them to navigate through these videos and find specifically the task that they're looking to accomplish. And they, once they log in, they have access to them, like you said, 24/7. So, and we have people from all over the world. So the time frames are so different for everybody. And once you're a paid member to our online classes, we also have a community that you're invited into, which is a private group on Facebook. And in there, people will share the pictures and ask questions about specific projects that they're working on or specific points in the project. Mm-hmm. And all of that is available for, it's $25 a month. It's a reoccurring payment, so it's an auto renewal until you shut it off. But it's very easy to go in to my account, click, you know, I don't want to be on for now. Because mm-hmm. we have a lot of people that will go out like during vacation time and then come back in. Mm-hmm. And we've been doing that. We started it in January of 2015. We went live with the first version of the website. And then, you know, we figured out all the bugs and stuff. And then in July, we launched it on a new web platform. Mm-hmm. And since then, it has absolutely gone crazy. And it's much easier to use. So we have thousands of people go in and out of our membership.
Okay. And I had noticed on your Craftsy class page, You also had people from around the world who were commenting and showing their projects. And I think that's just, like you said, people know who you were and you didn't know who they were. And that's just such a great impact that you're having on people and teaching them, whether it's a skill to start their own business or just to be able to do something for their own home or someone that they love, has to be a great feeling.
It is. It really is. And it's the funnier part is being all over the world. I have this one gentleman from Africa who calls me every 8 weeks just to say, "Hi, Kim, how you doing? It's your friend from Africa." And he's very hard to understand because of the strong accent. And we'll chat for a couple minutes and he'll tell me what he's doing. I'll say, "Okay, I'll talk to you later. Goodbye."
Oh,
And
that's
like
so
the day
cute.
before Christmas, he called me and left a message on my answer machine. He's like, "Merry Christmas from Africa." So it's just cute. And I've got this a couple women from the UK that will do the same type of thing. They'll call and they're like, "Hi, Kim, it's Sherry again. Just wanted to tell you, I love that new video you put on the website." And she's like, "Don't want to stay on long because the charges are long,
Right.
distance, but thanks and goodbye," and hang
Oh,
up.
that's
So,
so awesome. That's so, what a neat feeling to know that you're having that impact on other people. And you and I are on the new Textile Blab together on Wednesday mornings. And one of the things that we talked about today was the fact that managing social media and managing these things. So you are talking about managing the Craftsy class, managing your subscription website, answering questions. And I know that you and Bill are a partnership, and it's obvious when I see the two of you together how well you work together. But that's a lot to manage. There's a lot of pieces. So, like a lot of business owners, you've gone from, I'm upholstering furniture to I'm running an education business. And so how has that transition been, and how do you and Bill handle that piece of it?
Yeah,
Because that could reach burnout very quickly too.
it can. I mean, when the website really first started taking off, have you ever seen that commercial where, and I can't think of what it's for, but the guys are like made a little widget of some sort and they launch it on the website and they're all standing around the computer and they're staring
Yes.
at the screen and one order comes in, two orders come in, and then all of a sudden their eyes are big and they're like, "Oh, how are you going to manufacture all this
Yes,
stuff?"
yes.
So it was kind of that effect for us. And it didn't happen like in that 5 minute span staring at the computer, but within a couple months, it was like, "Oh my gosh, this is really taking off." And so now we have to like delegate. You handle this part and I handle this part. So there's different aspects of the membership portal and different aspects of the social media that we're both responsible for. He handles, because we get a gazillion questions on YouTube as well. So we've still got that piece. So
Right.
he handles the YouTube. I handle the questions on the DIY community that we have for the group of members that are related to certain aspects of the upholstery, and he handles ones that are related to the other aspects. And if he doesn't see it, I'll tag him in a post so that he knows to go look at that. So
Okay.
it's really, we divided where our ex where each of our expertise lands, and we've divided it up that way. And I mean,
Okay.
in the beginning, before we made the conscious decision to do that, it was like, "Oh my God, we could get burnt out at this really quick." And we've actually slowed down on the retail end of our business because the education portion has become almost 50% of our income at this point.
Okay.
So it's really taken off.
And I was just going to say, as well as trying to reupholster things in the meantime while you're answering those questions, it's sort of back to the beginning where you had the daycare business. All right, you stay in here while
Yeah,
I
exactly. And it
go out
was
there.
like, we kind of knew that was the case, but one day we were talking to Bill's son, and it was one of those of, "Oh my God, Kim is just like going nonstop." And he looked at his father and he said, "Well, Dad, you guys are running two businesses again. Haven't you realized that?" And we're like, "Oh yeah." And it was
No, I
like,
hadn't
"So
realized it,
what?"
but
It's like it's all upholstery, right? But it's two separate entities. And I've slowed down like on my window treatment clients because that wasn't a huge aspect of my business anyway. So I've gotten to the point where I turn those over. Like Sandra has mentioned in many of her conversations on scheduling your time and stuff, you give yourself permission to turn those jobs to somebody else and say, "That's not my expertise. That's not what I want to be doing today. So here's somebody that can help you with your pinch-pully drapes."
And be fine with it and let it go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we've definitely consolidated what we do for retail clients. We don't do boats anymore. We don't do motorcycle seats and the window treatments. I pick and choose what I want to do. So we're predominantly upholstery, and slip covers is the second closest thing to the upholstery.
Okay. So you started this business working out of your garage.
Yeah. No, actually, I started this business working out
In your living room. You did say that. Okay. So what equipment did you start with?
So I had a home, I think it was a Viking home sewing machine. And I quickly realized during my class, trying to do stuff at home while I was in between class projects, that it was not going to cut it for doing the upholstery weight fabric. So I went to my instructor and said, I'm in the market for a sewing machine. Can you give me a direction to go in? And he says, yep, I have a Singer 3115 that you can have for $200. It's in storage. You know, all you got to do is go pick it up. And he says, it's got your cording feet. It's not a walking foot, which I didn't have the knowledge of the walking foot at that point. So I took this thing from him and it struggled with it. It was a good workhorse, but it was not a walking foot machine. And within a year, I finally realized that there's got to be a better option than this. But that was my first thing. So my instructor sold me that. He gave me my first regulator, and he gave me his favorite wooden mallet, because I happened to be one of the students that really was serious mm-hmm. about this career. And most of them were just, you know, women that needed to get away from their husbands, or husbands that needed to get away from their wives and their night out.
Right.
So yeah, so those are my first tools were my sewing machine, my regulator, and a wooden mallet that he gave me.
So when you got your first walking foot, was it set up in your living room, or was that when you started to move things out of the living room?
By then, we had actually built a garage. I went from the living room to Bill's son, Jason, graduated from high school and moved out. So I went from the living room to his bedroom and moved my equipment and stuff in there. And then we built a 28 by 36 foot garage on the end of our house, because Bill also built ultralight airplanes. And he wanted a space to do that. And he had bought himself a 1937 Chevy truck that he wanted to restore. So the garage was built for Bill. And one day I'm in the garage with my new sewing machine, working on something, and he's sitting outside in the rain working on his truck, and he looks in the door and he says, I think you took over. I'm like, yeah, I kind of did, didn't I? And that was about the time that it was like, okay, this is a business, not a hobby anymore.
Right.
But yeah, so I didn't move into the garage for a little while. But
I love that. I think you took over. Yes, I think you did. So I ask this question of a lot of people, but I'm not sure that it even applies to you, but I'm still going to ask just in case. You said it's been going gangbusters ever since, and I know we all have some ebbs and flows in the business. Was it ever too much of a challenge, even for somebody who loves a challenge as much as you do, or was it ever a point where you said, yeah, I'm just not going to do this anymore? Did you ever consider quitting?
No, never. Okay. I've never looked back.
Okay. That comes up sometimes because people either go through a tough time and business isn't as busy as they would like it to be, or they feel so challenged by what they don't know. As you said, you didn't even have the knowledge of the walking foot. So I was curious, but I had a suspicion that was going to be your answer, because you've been pretty passionate about it. So you mentioned the tools. What was your first stapler? Was it a handheld, or was it an electric, or was it a pneumatic?
It was a pneumatic.
Okay.
It was a pneumatic. I want to say it was a Craftsman or something. I forget. It was something we bought locally, and it worked great for a long time. Mm-hmm. But it just didn't hold up with the usage once we got really going.
Right, right.
Yeah.
When I first started in my window treatment business and I was doing some cornices and valances, my first stapler was a handheld. And that lasted about one window treatment.
I have a handheld that I thought would be a good backup.
Yeah.
But not so much.
Well, my electric one is now my backup that's in my installation box. And the pneumatic one, when I first got that, it was just like, oh, wow, this is awesome. What a difference. I mean, I think what arthritis I have in my hand is from that very first stapler.
Well, actually, to backtrack a little bit, before I started with a pneumatic staple gun, I actually was taught by my instructor to spit tacks. So
really?
You literally take a handful of the upholstery tacks, mm-hmm. you toss them in your mouth, and you have a magnetic hammer that you then take a tack out of your mouth and pound it into the chair.
Oh, so, wow.
And the reason you have to put them in your mouth is, anybody who's tried upholstery, is you have to hold the fabric with one hand and attach it with whatever you're using in the other hand. So you can't pick up a tack and hold it on the chair,
right?
Because you're using the fabric.
Right.
And I did do that for quite a while. I mean, when
Okay.
I did that for the full 2 years in the class, and then I probably did it for a good 6 months to a year afterwards
Okay.
before Bill said, you know what, let's try a pneumatic gun because this is going to like ruin your teeth over the years. And I
Right.
had also nailed myself in the lip a few times. So,
Yeah.
it was time to change.
Yeah. So is that, and I know we go back and forth within both of our industries because I'm more on the window treatment end. Susan Woodcock has said, and other people have said as well, there are three, at least three ways of doing things. So when you were taught to spit the tacks, moving to the stapling, did that feel like it was a shortcut to you, or you were leaving behind the bespoke aspect of it, or it just didn't make sense for you to continue trying to do it that way and actually make money? Like, where on the spectrum does that fall?
When you first do it, you do think, well, this isn't the real thing, because of the pieces you're taking apart back at, when I first started, is most of the stuff I was tearing down had the tacks in it. So you feel like I'm kind of cheating, and then you get over that. And you give yourself permission to do it a little quicker. It's like taking a class, learning a new technique, and coming home and doing a project in half the time you did it before you learned that new technique. You just kind of let go. And it was, I was always paranoid that I was going to choke or something and swallow a mouthful of tacks. I always had that fear when you have tacks in your mouth.
That was actually my first thought when you said it. I'd be the first one swallowing them. So, you also are very active on several different social media platforms, and I've been on Blabs with you. And for anyone listening who doesn't know what a Blab is, it's through Twitter, and they're an awful lot of fun because you get to do a face-to-face with at least three other people with. As many, I don't know if there's a limit to the number of people who can sign on, but people can ask questions and comment, and there's a lot of interaction in those blabs. So I know you do the one with Sandra, but you also do, is it two evenings a week that you do your blab? Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, we were doing a Tuesday evening and a Thursday morning. So we were doing it at 7 p.m. Tuesday evening Eastern Standard Time and then 8 a.m. Thursday morning, figuring that way we hit both crowds because we have a lot of members who, work a 40-hour a week job. So they would come in the nights on Tuesday, and then you've got those who are working from home or running a business that would come in the morning before they went to work. We have put a kind of hold on those through the summer because people are just really busy, but we will get back to the blabs once everybody's time, frees up, because right now with graduations and all that going on, people just weren't being able to make it. And we said, you know what, we'll wait until you guys are ready again and then we'll come back.
And so, what is that forum like? Is that an opportunity for people to ask questions of you, talk about their projects? How do you structure those blabs?
We started them for the members of our online classes. So it's for them to share projects they're working on. They have the opportunity to email us pictures, and Bill has a program that he has purchased that we can then put their pictures right there live on the blab. So they can see the air, they can say, I'm talking about that spot right there under the arm. And they can have that, we can have that visual to have that conversation. Because we found through emails, people would email me and say, I'm talking about the part underneath the arm, around the corner, behind the post. And we're like, I can't quite get where you're talking about. Because first of all, they weren't calling the components the right names. So, their wording and my wording. And that's why we said, you know what, start doing the blabs, have them send us images. And then that way we can really get down to the meat and potatoes of what they're asking.
So it really is a great add-on to what they're paying for. They're also getting a chance to say, I did this. What could I have done differently? How could I do it better? So it's really worth their time to spend logging on. I mean, as I said, they're a lot of fun because the interaction is fantastic. So I have been on a couple of your blabs. I don't do much upholstery, but there's a lot of laughter going on there. I think that's awesome.
We do. We have quite the fun time for sure. And I mean, the other conversation that they have where we have a lot of interaction, but it's not the live, is the private Facebook group that we have for members. And it's great in there because it really is a community tribe that we have developed. So we've got hundreds of people from all over the world. So there's always people in that group because we've got people from the Netherlands and England and Sweden and stuff. So it's different hours of the day. is
So
their
at any
daytime.
time, somebody's on that Facebook
Somebody's
group.
in there.
Oh, that is
And
so cool.
it's fun because you'll be on, somebody will ask a question and you'll see it and you'll answer it and they'll immediately respond to your answer. So even though it's not a live face to face, the conversation gets going in there too. So it's still fun.
Right. And I see that on the Facebook groups that I belong to for the window treatment
Yeah.
industry. You can post a question and sometimes within seconds, somebody's giving you an answer.
Yeah.
But I'm like you, you can read things to me or give me words, and I'm an avid reader, but I really do so much better with pictures. And if you can show me a picture of what you're trying to do, I can understand it a whole lot better. So I can appreciate. And Facebook is a place where it's easy to add the pictures too.
Right. Yeah. And you know, sometimes like the terms, I mean, and I know it's the same in window treatments, you'll have a something you call a specific part of the window treatment or technique that you're doing, and somebody else calls it something totally different.
Right.
So the images do help.
Return or projection. They're both
Exactly.
the same thing, but if you don't understand what the other word means, then you don't know what they're talking about.
You're right.
So you also do a live Facebook where you show some techniques and things like that. So tell us about that part of it too.
So we do the live Facebook right now. We've been doing them on Wednesdays at 12:30, and we figure that's, you know, kind of the lunch hour for our people who are working their 40-hour a week jobs, and it's also the lunch hour for the people that are in business that can watch too. So it's kind of, you know, we figure that's in the middle of lunch hour, so hopefully we'll catch some. And that is pretty much, I'm in the workroom, you're seeing it real time. This is what I'm working on today. This is how I do it. You know, you can actually see in live time how long I take. And I'm talking about what I'm doing as we're on Facebook Live, and people can feed questions in, and Bill is watching the stream.
Okay.
So he can say, okay, you know, Sue from North Dakota has a question on such and such that you just talked about. So I'll stop and I'll respond to, you know, what the question was.
Okay.
And it's fun because people can really see, and people will say, okay, what, you know, what machine are you using to do that? Or what's the thread type that you're using? And, you know, so they get those questions that they may not think of watching a video, but because I'm having the conversation while I'm doing it, it inspires them to ask other questions that they might not otherwise ask.
And I do think that minus the opportunity to have a hands-on class, anything that's live or a video gives people a chance to see even something as simple as maybe how you hold the stapler.
Exactly.
You might do something when you're shifting the fabric and put it somewhere, and somebody else might go, oh, I never thought about that. I remember the first WCAA meeting that I went to that was an instructional meeting. Janelle Deck did the class in a colleague's workroom, and she did something with a sewing machine, and I had been given an industrial sewing machine, so I knew nothing about it.
Yeah.
And every time I went to change the bobbin, I flipped the whole head back and changed the bobbin. And I'm watching her reach underneath the sewing machine. I'm like, what is she doing? I'm like, oh, I can change the bobbin by reaching underneath. And that's not what the class was about, but that was my takeaway. And, you know, 8.5 years later, I'm still amazed that I didn't know I could do that with the bobbin case. So it's, I think those are the kind of things where someone watching you will learn as much as if it was to take a class from you. I think that's really important.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I know that when people are listening to a podcast, they can't see you or I, but I've seen you enough times on the blabs, and I have to ask about the pearls because you have pearls on for almost every blab, and I can see the mannequin behind you right now. She's got her lace, she's got her pearls. So tell me about the pearls.
I just happen to be somebody that likes to wear pearls, and I do happen to like pink. So it just started, people started noticing in some of the videos that we did early on YouTube, they're like, oh, nice pearls, Kim. And I'm like, huh, never really thought of that.
Right.
And, you know, we'd get comments and then it'd say, hey, you don't have your pearls on for this one. Where are they? And I was like, you know what? They're starting to recognize me with the pearls.
Right.
So it just kind of became one of my branding symbols is the pearls and the pink. So.
And I noticed that. I know the one morning I had pink on, you commented on it.
Yeah.
But it's funny because I do notice that about you. And it's interesting that your viewers and your the people that follow you pay that much attention.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. So I have a couple questions for you about just some of the things I like to ask everybody who's on the podcast. What is your favorite technology?
I have several.
Okay.
Sewing machine is one of my favorite technologies, and people don't really think of that as a technology. But just think about way back, you know, people used to hand sew, and now we've got this machine that can sew our seams together and make things much, you know, much tighter a seam. So I love my sewing machine because it helps me create beautiful things. And my walking foot, of course, is my most favorite machine, because anybody who is going to make a lot of cushions in their lifetime, or even slip covers, will not believe the difference that it is, that it makes to have a walking foot sewing machine to do that. So that's probably my top favorite. Computers obviously are another favorite, and it's for several reasons. You know, it makes it so much easier for us to find out about things that we need to find out about, but it helps me to share with the world how to learn how to upholster. You know, it's like it's made it so I can teach these people that are all over the world, in Africa and Netherlands and Ireland and Italy and stuff, which I would have never had that possibility before, to teach them a skill that they want to learn and to become friends with them. I mean, we have conversations. We, you know, I have some people that I chat with daily that are from different countries, you know, through our membership. So the technology with the computer is just, to me, a great asset for everybody to be able to learn and to meet new people that you would have never, ever had the pleasure, you know, pleasure of meeting before. I mean, you, for example, you know, I wouldn't have known you if it wasn't for computer and technology.
That's very true. I love that.
And then the smartphones and the iPads, because we can share the images. You know, I love that quick, you know, oh, look at what I just saw here at Brimfield's Flea Market. And I take a picture and I post it to the to my community through my membership and say, look at this chair. Wouldn't this be awesome to have in your workroom to upholster? You know, so this, those technology things are, I guess, my key ones.
So what is your favorite product in your workroom?
Fabric. I just love fabric.
You do love fabric.
I do. And, you know, it always puzzles Bill, because we'll go on vacation and I'm like, oh, is there a fabric store in this town? And he's like, really? We have to spend time on vacation going to a fabric store? But you just, different areas of the country have different things. Right. So I just love fabrics.
Well, I know you also took a trip to New York with, and I'm going to mispronounce her name, so I'm going to let you pronounce it, the trim queen.
Yeah, Jana Platina Phipps.
That looked like you had a blast.
It is so much fun to go to New York City with somebody that knows those hidden treasures of stores. She took me into one store, and the name completely escapes me right this second, that was a trim and embellishment store. And it was rows and rows of trims that you don't see. You know, she buys like trims that stores have had in inventory and have gone out of business, and that have been in the back room for, you know, years and years and years. So stuff that you've never seen before. She has bins of the most decorative buttons you can imagine, and different floral embellishments and stuff. So she took me to that store, and she took me to a couple others that were, you know, embellishment stores. There was a factory that made flowers. They make silk flowers for a lot of different bridal type things, as well as for, you know, regular garments or just for decoration too. So it was really fantastic to go with somebody that knew where all those locations were and had people that would let you into the back rooms. And you can see how they're making these flowers, you know, where you don't get to see that if you're just the shopper, you know, retail shopper walking into the storefront.
And I do, that is something I've seen about you. You do often post like combinations of fabrics and the fabrics that you're going to be working on a particular day. And it's so obvious that you love the fabrics, because you point out the things that only someone who loves fabric would notice. And the rest of us who do appreciate that about you.
Well, thank you.
What would you say, you mentioned the smartphones and the iPad. What's your favorite app?
My favorite apps are the phone apps that you can use for images to make collages. The one that I use the most is called Be Funky. And I can take the different pictures that I've taken and create a collage with them. There's a couple others, Snapseed, you can edit your photos. And then there's one other that I can't think of the name of right now that you can take and also do a collage, but then you can put text over the top of it. Ripley or something like that, so that you can put the text over the top of it. And those are really great because, I mean, you and I had this conversation this morning on Blab that a lot of my marketing of my business is the social media. So these are all things that help me to put the images out there for my members to see and for my potential students to see. You know, so those apps that I can do things with photos. I also love my Pinterest and Instagram app because I can go see all the pretty pictures that everybody else is putting out there and check out the other fabrics that I haven't found
right.
yet.
The ones you haven't worked with yet.
Right.
What would you say is your biggest obsession?
Oh, my biggest obsession is flea markets. Okay. I love the thrill of the hunt. You know, my husband will say to me, Kim, we don't need anything else. You're trying to get rid of stuff. Why do you still want to go to these flea markets? But it's just, I don't always have a specific item in mind, but I'll be walking through the flea market and it takes me twice as long as it takes anybody else because I'll look at a shelving system, say that's got a bunch of things on it, and I just kind of scan across it and all of a sudden my eye will catch on something and it'll be like, I know exactly what I can do with that. Okay. And then I bring home these random things and Bill is like, what are you doing with this? You know, we don't need that. It's just another dust collector. But then I'll create little vignettes in our home and they each have a meaning to me because right. I've found these little odd items somewhere or, you know, it might be something that reminds me of somebody in my family.
Okay.
And I purchase it, you know, that kind of thing. But it's the thrill of the hunt through flea markets.
You do have a great blog post about one of your local flea markets. So I will post your website in the show notes for this. So if people want to go and check out that blog, I was enjoying that. And I'll just leave people with this. It has to do with headless mannequins and they can go read it after they listen to this. But I thought that was a great blog post. Let's see, what else did I want to ask you about? What do you do extremely well?
Well, it started, my first thing I did extremely well was helping clients combine fabrics and visualize things in their room when I was doing just retail. I was very good at helping them to see how a piece of fabric would look on their furniture and really walking them through how to envision this finished product and helping them mix different patterns together. Because, I mean, you're in this industry. You know that right. people think everything has to be solid and then I have one floral in the room. And that's not the case. You can mix it up. You can add all kinds of different things and make it work really well. And then the second thing that I think I'm really good at is helping my students to overcome the fears of starting a project.
Okay.
You know, it's like they'll send me pictures and say, you know, I'm really nervous. And I'll say, okay, you know, this video on the membership site has this portion and this video on the membership has that portion. You just need to break it down into parts. You don't look at this chair as a whole club chair or whatever. You've got to take it in your head and say, okay, this is the deck portion. It may not be the same as the club chair that I have on the membership site,
right.
but that deck is the same as the one in the wingback chair.
Right.
And I think that I'm good at helping the students get over that fear and realizing, okay, it's just parts. It's
right.
not this whole unit. It's like an eat that frog, breaking it down into chunks
yeah.
in small pieces.
And even though we both love fabric, it is just fabric. We can cut
yeah.
it and we can get more of it if we need
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
Sometimes we can't, but.
Sometimes we can't, yeah. And that's one thing I've learned with my workshops is when I do the 3-day workshops where they bring in a piece of furniture, mm-hmm. I've had a couple episodes where, or instances rather, where someone has brought in really expensive fabric and this is their first ever upholstery project. I'm like, not such a good idea.
I have a confession to make. I did take an upholstery class through the WCAA, and I had two antique chairs that belonged to a friend of mine, and she wanted them reupholstered for her shore house, and that was my first ever piece. And I sweated through the entire thing, because if I messed up, it was supposed to go in her
yeah,
living room.
Yeah.
So I definitely do not recommend that to people.
And I always, that's part of the listing that I give the people that want to attend the workshops is don't start with a client's project and don't start with the most expensive fabric that you absolutely love.
Right. Test it out first.
Yeah.
So what would you say you're not very good at?
I'm not very good at managing my time. I have such a sense of responsibility of being there for the members of our online classes that I find myself during the day falling down that rabbit hole of technology saying, okay, one of the members posted a question. I have to go in and answer that right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I could wait until the end of the day and they'll be patient, but it's just, I find myself getting, just feeling like I need to get to them right at that moment. So managing my time for me is tough, and it's more of convincing myself that their question can wait an hour while you finish this project that you're working on or two, you know, or you can wait and answer them at lunchtime.
Okay. You know, all right. So, and we have talked about the time management on the blogs. Yeah. I think that's really a big part of it.
I don't think I'll ever get over that.
probably just... not. So what would you say is the strangest thing? I usually ask the strangest thing you've ever sewn or fabricated. In your case, it might be, what is the strangest thing you've ever upholstered?
Well, the strangest thing I ever upholstered was this seating for a car. It was actually for a antique car barn. So the barn was a place where guys could go sit and look at all this gentleman's antique cars. And they had like a bar area and stuff. But you walked into this entryway and he had this round seat. And the best way to describe it is, think of one of those racks that you see poker chips in. Mm-hmm. So it's a round cylinder, and then it's got these little cylinder holes.
Oh, it's on your website. I know exactly what you're talking about.
All right.
Yes.
So you know, yeah. So it's got the round chips for the poker seat, mm-hmm. poker pieces to sit in, but instead it's for your butt. So it had, it's this round thing. It must have been, I don't know, about 6 feet across maybe. Mm-hmm. And then it had four seats.
So it looks like you sit with your back to everyone.
You sit with your back to everybody. And it was done in a red and black leather combination. So the whole exterior portion of this was one unit that was sewn together and slipped over this whole 6 foot diameter thing that was probably four and a half feet tall, maybe. Okay. Maybe not quite that tall, maybe 3.5 to 4 feet. So it was this whole cover that you sewed, and then you slipped over this frame, stapled it underneath, stapled it into the areas where you sit, and then you upholstered these seats that then sat on top of it, which were like the cushions. But it was an upholstered piece that sat into it. So that was probably the strangest piece. And when they showed up with it on the doorstep, I'm like, uh-oh. You know, and this is a client I do a lot of work for. And he had picked it up at Brimfield Flea Market, one of my favorite places, and said, send it to Kim. She can do this for me and tell her we want black and red leather. And then Yankee Candle down the road from us has this castle section of their store. And they have these two antique thrones, which we have reupholstered in 20 years, probably three times for them, because they're in the public area. Mm-hmm. And they are huge. They must be 8 feet tall. So we have only one part of our workspace that they can actually stand up in to do. So those were kind of another funny one. And then, let's see, we've done like slip covers for outdoor kitchen areas. Mm-hmm. So in the winter, they want like these slip covers that go over. So in effect, it's like a grill cover, but it's huge. You know, it's like a counter that's 36 inches deep. You know, those kind of things. What else have we done? Oh, this was one of the ones that I'm glad we didn't know until after what the value was. The same client that had this round piece had a antique suit of armor that he had purchased, and one of the arms came loose. And there, what it is in between it, they're riveted with leather straps.
Okay.
And so he brought this arm out of the suit of armor to us and said, fix this. So Bill figured it out and he fixed it and we returned it. And he says, you know, that's worth $100,000. We're like, oh, geez. I'm like, I'm glad you didn't tell me that before we had it done.
I'm glad you didn't know about it either.
Yeah, we would have just sat there and stared at it for a while.
Yeah, for a long time.
Yeah. It was like one time I delivered a job to a client. It was two wingback chairs. They had done them in a red velvet and had supplied their own fabric. And it was two wingback chairs and a settee. So I think there was a total of like 20, 25 yards of fabric. So we finished the job, delivered them. And she said, oh, those are great. You did a fabulous job. And he says, yeah, for $500 a yard fabric, they ought to look great. And I was just like,
oh, yikes. Yeah, there are times we don't want to know those things.
Right. <yeah. laughs> Wish I had sold that.
But. Right. So before we wrap it up, do you have any advice for someone getting into this business or in the soft furnishing industries, the soft furnishing industry in general? What advice would you give to somebody starting out?
I would say the biggest thing is just go for it. Don't be intimidated. Don't underestimate your talents. If you have the skills to sew. You can teach yourself or find the education you need to do those things that you don't have. If, like I mentioned before, if you look at these long lists of things that they tell you you have to have to start a business, you'll never get started because you're so intimidated by the list. But if you truly have a passion and you have the drive to keep yourself going, and the key to me to being an entrepreneur is you have to be a self-starter, because there's nobody behind you saying, it's 8 o'clock, get in the workroom.
Right.
You know, you get these phone calls to make. So you really need to be a self-starter, but don't second guess yourself and don't doubt yourself, because there is enough of us in these industries as support systems that we're there to help you.
Mm-hmm.
There's enough groups out there that you can get into the groups and say, look, I'm doing my very first Roman shade. I don't know what I'm doing. What do I use for head rail?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's people to answer those questions. Or if you're doing upholstery and, you know, a client brought you a chair with a broken leg, you know, we're there to help you. There's people that can answer those questions. So don't second guess yourself. Just get going. Because if you don't ever start, you won't ever start.
Oh, that is great advice. Kim, thanks so much for spending the time to talk with us today. I really appreciate it. And to everyone else, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Hill.